Evening, everyone. We're starting at 8:01, 8 o'clock. Tonight's lesson is the third lesson of Wrestling with Faith. And today's subject is the clash. What's the clash? Clash is two things that are not fitting together. So, a page. It's the third lesson, so it's page 70.
Thank you.
So, let's go some of the things that we basically feel, and it's something we wrestle with. That's why it's part of this course. We wrestle a lot with this. Is that many people feel that Judaism and Torah is outdated. In many ways, outdated in the sense that, you know, when the Torah was given, you know, many things didn't exist, and many different concepts were not here. So what's going on? How can we say that Torah is as prevalent today as then? So one of the things is discrimination among people, which seems in the Jewish, in the Torah, major discrimination. And we know discrimination is a big crime. You know, we have the, in, especially in the Western civilization, you know, everyone is equal, as we'll soon show you in the English mandate and the U.S. Bylaws and amendment. Judaism tries to also control us, you know, what we do eat, what we don't eat. Where's the freedom? Is this what God wants us? And we wrestle. God is so in control of us. Can we just be free and do what we want? Don't we have the right to live the way we want to live? And Torah gives us so many different restrictions. So is this fear in our society, which everything is freedom, the right, all the rights we have? And here the Torah doesn't let us have rights. So let's take quick examples. As you see on the PowerPoint, Jew and non-Jew. Who made this difference between a Jew and a non-Jew? Who decided this? In the Torah. Torah says, I chose you from all the nations. There's 70 nations, and I chose you, and I made you a Jew. So that's discrimination. We're equal. So how could you choose one over another? Then we have amongst Jews themselves, you have Kohen, Levi, and Israel. So a Kohen has rights and privileges that the other two don't have. And then Levi has rights and privileges and other two don't have. Then you have male and female. There's many things that the Torah says for males, that females are not obligated, and the females are obligated, not obligated. So the Torah is discriminating in among the genders. There's a famous story of Mr. Schwartz. You remember the story of Mr. Schwartz?
When you say that, it makes me laugh.
It makes you laugh. Mr. Schwartz was a very strange, he was arguing so much with the rabbi that he wanted to become a Kohen. The rabbi says, I can't do anything about it. It's the Torah already told Aaron that only his children will be Kohen. I'm sorry, it wasn't up to me. He says, I'll pay you $100,000. The rabbi says, I'm sorry, you can pay. So I'll give you $1,000,000. Anyways, finally the rabbi says, you know what, for $1,000,000, let's discuss it. For $1,000,000. Anyways, it comes on Shabbos. He prepares him and he calls him up, Yamod, Rabbi Moshe ben Rab Nasan, for the being the Kohen in Aliyah. And he paid the $1,000,000, and then the rabbi asked him, let me ask you a serious question. Why were you so adamant that you have to be a Kohen? You know, were you ready to pay $1,000,000 for a Kohen? Like, what's got into your head? He says, well, what should I tell you? My father was, my grandfather, and my great-grandfather wore a Kohen. Anyway, so you understand what I'm saying. Now, social roles. We have a lot of discrimination of, like I said, Kohen, Jew, non-Jew. Then you have freedoms of choice. So you see on the PowerPoint, for example, Shabbos. You can't work on Shabbos. You can't eat this. You could only marry someone that's part of the Jewish faith. People from the same gender can't get married, can't have relations. Couple are limited at times when they could have intimacy, according to the Torah, when they can't have intimacy. I mean, there's so much in the Torah that almost like controls me. Like, what's going on here? So, this is something that I feel is wrestling with faith. And many people use this and say, Torah is not, it's not with me, it's not going to work. On two reasons. One is, I want to be able to live a normal, free life. I don't want someone to tell me what to do and control my life, what I eat, what I don't eat, when I could work, when I can't work, and what I have to say before I eat, and what has to be kosher. And number two, you know, it's outdated. We have a whole different thing. So how do you answer such an issue? And the only way to answer this question is not by answering the question, because there's no way you could answer the question. Why did God make female and male? Why did God make Kohen and Levi? Why did God make Jew and non-Jew? The only thing we have to understand is a different paradigm of understanding the way the Torah works and God versus the Western secular system. If we understand the difference, then everything will fit in place. So we're going to show you just a video. It's like a 4-minute video where the first constitution, so to say, of the Western civilization of rights, of human rights, began. And we're going to ask our Rebbetzin to put it on, please. This is going back in England, year 12...
15.
Oh, see, he remembers. I wasn't there. I wasn't there.
Of a water meadow just 20 miles west of ancient London, a tyrannical monarch sat humbled. King John of England had demonstrated such cruelty and arbitrary justice that the English barons rose in rebellion. There, among the meadows of Runnymede, a compromise was signed, and its effects are felt louder and more happily today than at the time it was inked. The agreement was later named in Latin Magna Carta, or the Great Charter of the Liberties. It opens with a revolutionary statement of freedom. To all free men of our kingdom, we have also granted, for us and our heirs forever, all the liberties written out below. On that day, the idea of the law standing above the government was written into a contract. King John accepted that he would no longer get to make the rules up as he went along. In a bold quest for fair treatment, the Charter invented rights such as protection from illegal imprisonment, access to swift justice, and limitations on taxation. These expectations were renegotiated over the centuries until they came to sudden and full bloom 5.5 centuries later. It was not British barons this time, but the colonies of North America that conspired to remove the shackles of the British monarchy. The founding fathers of the United States were also motivated by the pursuit of basic rights and freedoms. Their underlying outlook, however, could not have been more different. The Barons believed that God gave a monarch full ownership and control over his subjects. Therefore, the Magna Carta's revolutionary granting of rights was in fact just another royal decree. The king was ordering that his subjects be granted certain considerations. The founding fathers, on the other hand, believed that God created humans to be free altogether and perfectly equal. This meant doing away with the monarchy and ruling classes of privileged elites. The 1776 U.S. Declaration of Independence argued that by virtue of being born a human being, an individual is entitled to a set of considerations at the hands of fellow humans. According to this perspective, human rights are not negotiable. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So free did God create humans, argued the founders of America, that any form of government is an intrusion on that freedom. It is only because a complete lack of authority would invite anarchy and jeopardize everyone's human rights that it is necessary to establish a governing entity to safeguard those freedoms and rights. This, and only this, is the purpose of government. To secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Freedom and governance is a perpetual tug of war. In order to ensure that the government serves the people, and not the other way around, the American vision calls for limited governmental powers to the minimum necessary to ensure a safe and sane society. And very importantly, before setting up a people's government, America's fathers stipulated that if any government begins to infringe on human rights instead of protecting them, the American people must replace the government and rethink the form of leadership. Whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Having retreated some 800 years to review the origins, context, and underlying principles of modern law and the rights it seeks to protect, why don't we stretch back further in time? Say about 2,500 years before the Magna Carta, to the abrupt emergence of an entire body of laws, not in a green meadow, but in the sandy desert of the Sinai. What are the underlying principles of the Torah's laws? What rights, if any, does the Torah bestow?
So basically, one of the biggest differences between the English 1215, let's call it Declaration of Human Rights, is that that was more granted by the monarchy, giving the right to the people, because it was the monarchy like had inherently have the right to do anything. And then they did decided, you know what, we're giving the right that people also have rights. That was in England, 1215, June 1215. A few hundred years later, America established a whole different perspective. They said, it's not that the monarchy gives us the right. We inherently, as humans, have rights. So why do we need a government? The only reason you need a government is to help us have rights. So if the government infringes on our rights, then we have to change the government. And that's why we have voting, you know, every 4 years. One that you want here, if this guy wants this, and this guy doesn't like this, and immigration, all kinds of things. And that's good. That's what the society is. So basically, the the way the secular law works is very simple. The humans, the way it's established in the last 200 and something years, humans inherently have rights because they're humans. Created by under one God, let me see. All men are created equal and are endowed by their creator. Yeah, by the creator. Which that's a little conflict because in the Western culture, not everyone believes we have a creator. So that you have to know, how did they put the word creator? And maybe they have to change that word now, because if you believe that you're not created by God and you just happen to be evolved, that's a separate, I don't want to get into it. But I'm just saying, in the Declaration of Independence, if you read it, text 2, what does it say in the Declaration? I'm sure you know it by heart. This is like every little kid knows it in school, right? Right? Say.
Life, liberty, and
if you sin, how do you affect him?
No, text 2. Page 69. Lesson 3.
We hold these truths.
It is.
Page 69.
Text 2.
Text 3?
Text 2.
Text 2. Page 69.
69? Okay, go ahead.
69. You have 69?
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, unalienable. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Okay. So that's basically the law. So let's recap. All members of humanity are inherently free. This freedom is manifest in specific rights. Humans naturally come together to give and take to enrich their lives. This produces a society. Unfortunately, various aspects of society pose various threats, and therefore we protect it by having a government. The government's whole purpose is to be able to give the people the right to be free and have the right of doing what they feel is right. And therefore, if the government blocks it, this is against the whole constitution. So that's the Western culture. Now let's go to text 5 on page 73. How does the Jewish culture work? So the Jewish culture is totally a different... You have to put on a different pair of glasses. That's it, it is. Change the paradigm of how you see it. Why? How did God come to give us Judaism? What did he do? So in text 5, what happened? Moses
took the Book of the Covenant and read it to the people. They said, all that God has instructed, we will follow, and we will learn.
And then, on text 6.
On the morning of the third day, there were thunder, claps, and lightning flashes. A thick cloud hovered over the mountain. There was a deafening blast of a shofar. The entire nation that was in the camp shuddered. Moses led the people out of the camp to meet God. They stood at the bottom of the mountain. Mount Sinai was completely covered by smoke because God had descended upon it in fire. Its smoke ascended like the smoke of the kiln. The entire mountain quaked violently.
So when God came to the Jewish people to give them the Torah, what did they say? They want it or they don't want it? They said, Naaseh v'nishma. What does Naaseh v'nishma mean? We will do. In text 7, look what happened. When God came to give the Torah, what did God do? Read text 7.
These words teach us that God held the mountain over the Jews like a barrel. God said to them, if you accept my Torah, then it is good. If you don't, this will be your burial place.
So let me ask you a question. Something doesn't make sense here. A minute ago you tell me that God came to the Jewish, he went to the other nations and they said, no. The Jews say, we're ready to take it. It's for free, we'll take two. I'll give them two. And then later you say that God took Mount Sinai, put it over the Jewish people, and said, guys, if you take it, good. If not, you're going to be buried right on. So he forced them. What do you have to force? They said they're ready. You understand the conflict here?
Yes.
So why? Is it he was afraid they're going to back out? Well, if he's afraid he's going to back out, what, you're forcing them to accept it? They don't want it. Why would God force it on you? You see it? Kafar Aleim Harkagigas. And he said, if you accept the Torah, good. If not, here we're going to bury you. What's the point here? So...
But he didn't say that after you accepted it.
Yeah, after they accepted it, then when he came to give them the Torah, 3 days later, he put the mountain over the head, and he said, guys, if you accept it, good. If not, I'll bury you. What's the point? If they already accepted it, willingly, why you have to force it, right? So, there's something very interesting, two fundamentals in Judaism that is opposite of the Western culture. And that is the difference between Judaism and the society and the culture. Number one, the Torah is forever immutable. What does immutable mean?
Unchangeable.
Unchangeable. Unchangeable. Where do we see that? In the Torah, text 8a, 8a and 8b, look what it says.
Everything that I command you, you shall be careful to do. You shall neither add to it nor subtract from it. The revealed aspects of this Torah, that is, the laws, are for us and our children to observe forever.
Okay? So, the Torah, and then what does it say in text 9?
It is clear and explicit in the Torah that it is God's everlasting commandment and is not subject to change, addition, nor diminishment. As the Torah states, everything that I command you, you shall be careful to do. You shall neither add to it nor subtract from it. It also states the revealed aspects, that is the laws, of this Torah are for us and our children to observe forever. This teaches that we are commanded to fulfill all the Torah's directives forever.
So if you look at the difference between the modern law and the Torah law, you shall neither add or subtract from it. The commandments of the Torah are forever and our children. So that means it's not changeable. That means you can't change, nothing is going to change. And number two, it's forever. This is your mandate. In the secular law, so the Jewish law is immutable and eternal. When it comes to the secular law, the modern law, what do we have? It's replaceable, and it's changeable. Like we always have, constantly things are changing in the law. You know, you come up with, what is it called? The new Bill of Rights, the new all kinds of things. And the Torah is not. Why is that? Why is it that God gave the Torah in a way that it can't be changed and it's eternal? What was the, why? Why can't we change it a little? Spice it up a little. What's the reason? So here we have to put on another pair of glasses called the purpose of why God created the world to begin with. Why did God create this world? Why does God need this world? And why did he create the humans? Would it have been better if God would just have a world without human beings?
No.
There wouldn't be any killing, no stealing, just animals. Imagine just animals kill, yeah. So that's maybe a problem. Maybe just birds. Birds also kill. So maybe just fish.
Fish also
eat each other. So maybe just plants. Maybe plants, huh?
Also some plants.
Also some plants also, yeah.
Oh, wait, can I ask a question before
yeah.
you say something?
Yeah.
You'll have to help me with this because I'm not that well informed. Not all the laws of Judaism come directly from the Torah. there are other books added to it.
What do you mean?
All the laws and everything that we have to follow based on Judaism come directly from the Torah?
Yeah. You mean if, like the oral Torah versus the written, you mean?
No, Talmud.
That's a whole new.
But I know it's not all coming directly from the one book.
It's all from God. But when God gave the Torah, He gave two parts. He gave the written and the oral. And this, we had a whole course of why God made two parts of the Torah. Why didn't He write everything down? Why did He make it oral and written? But the Torah was given to begin with. It were two parts, the written and the oral. I'll give you just one example.
Yeah, I'm coming from where?
1 minute, one example. Okay. One example is tefillin, let's say. If you read in the written Torah, it doesn't say what it is. It just says, tie a sign on your hand and put it between your eyes. But it doesn't say what the sign is. So if you're just going to read the written Torah, you have no idea what it is. It could be potatoes or tomatoes. So who told us what it is? So when Moshe came down from Mount Sinai, he says, listen, you see what it says here, sign? Let me tell you what it is. And he gave them 8 laws of what tefillin is made. It's called Halacha L'Moshe Mishkin. It's not written in the Torah. But in the Talmud, it gives you all the 8 and all the details of the 8. It has to be square. It has to be made from leather. It has to have scrolls written, and what the scrolls have to be written, and how they have to be written, and then it has to have straps made from leather to tie it. This was all given orally. So that means the written Torah was given together with the oral, and that's the Talmud. You understand? I'll give you one more example. Hanukkah candles. Where does it say in the Torah about Hanukkah? Hanukkah happened 2,200 years ago. So why do we light Hanukkah candles every Hanukkah?
Well, that's what I meant.
I'll explain to you. In the Torah it says that every single day in the Beis HaMikdash they should light the menorah made from 7 candles, because the Jews represent 7, divided in 7 different types of Jews. What happens when the temple was destroyed? That ceased to exist. However, the Torah wants and says that the candles should be lit every day. So, when this miracle of Hanukkah happened, what happened? The menorah was supposed to burn for 1 day. The oil was enough for 1 day. It lasted 8 days. So the sages realized, oh, God wants that the kindling of the menorah should be something we eternally continue. Even when we don't have a temple. So what are we going to do? We're going to make Hanukkah menorah, which is an extension of the lighting of the menorah of the temple, to tell us that, look, this is what they did in the temple for 2,000 years, and we're continuing it every year, a week. So this is like gives us a continuation of it. You understand what I'm saying? So it's not that they made something new. It's a continuation of what is already exists. And there's hundreds of millions of things like that, and that's what the Talmud is all about, showing you how from the written Torah, you have the whole oral Torah. But that's a whole subject on its own. So, I'll tell you an interesting thing. It might be funny, but then you'll at least understand why God had to put the mountain over our heads and say, if you don't do it, it's over. The world was created for who?
God.
Huh?
For the human being.
For the human being to do what?
To live.
To live for what?
Bring God into it.
Why does God need the human being to live?
To do business.
Who needs the human beings to begin with? No, let's take it serious. I'm not taking it as a joke, very serious. Why did God create a world for humans? Why does humans have to be here? For what? Why do we have to live? So, no, it's a very good question. And the answer is, Chayav Adam Leimar, a person has to say, Bishvili Nivra Olam, that the whole world was created for me. But the person of doing it, why is it mean for me? Not for me that I should have a good time and able to have three slices of pizza a day, means that the whole world has a purpose. And this whole purpose of why I created the world to begin with, God says, I put it in your hands. It's up to you to make the reason that I created the world be true. So you can't say the other one should do it. It's all in your hands. What's the purpose? So if you see in text 10, a very interesting thing. Look in text 10.
God held the mountain over the Jewish people so that they wouldn't say, we chose to accept the Torah. Had we not found it appealing, we would have rejected it. This attitude would have undermined the value of the Torah. The world depends on the Torah. Without it, the world would revert to nothingness. Therefore, it would be inappropriate for the Torah's acceptance to hinge upon the willingness of the Jewish people. God forced the Jewish people to accept the Torah because there was no alternative. Otherwise, the world would have reverted to nothingness.
It says when God created the world, the whole reason God created the world was for just one reason. He wants this world to be godly. How? He gave the Jewish people and the nations also, gave them the Torah and the laws. And by you following the Torah and the nations, the seven Noach laws, you are fulfilling the purpose why God created the world. So if you're not gonna, then the world will revert back to nothingness as if it never existed to begin with. When did God give the Torah? In year 2000. So for 2000 years, the world was like shivering because they were dependent on if the Jews will accept it. So God realized, if they don't accept it, then the world doesn't exist. And I want the world to exist. Because I want to have a world where I could feel comfortable and live in this world just like I live in the spiritual worlds. So I'm giving you a Torah. You have no choice. You gotta follow the Torah. You know why? Because if we don't, then the world doesn't exist anymore. It won't exist. I'll bring it back to nothingness. Because the only reason I created the world was to have a world where I can live. And the way to do it is following the Torah is bringing me into this world and the Gentiles following their seven Noach laws. Or else the world goes back to nothingness. God made a condition when he created the world. He said, world, listen, I want to tell you something. If the Jews take the Torah, good. If not, you go back to zero. As if you never existed. All of a sudden, everything changes now. Why? When you look at the laws of modern law, as it says in text 11, look in text 11. There are two types of laws. Say?
There are two types of laws. Laws that create life and laws created by life. Human laws are created by life. Therefore, they vary in different countries, each according to its circumstances. Conversely, the Almighty's Torah is a godly law that creates life. God's Torah is the Torah of truth, the same in all places, at all times. The Torah is eternal.
So, what laws create life? Well, look. So, when you follow the Torah, you are creating life. You are creating the world. You are creating the society. The modern law doesn't create life. It's created by life. Because every country has different types of laws. Every country has different types of people. And every country has different types of concerns. So the laws change. And then when the generation changes and people change, they also change the laws. You know, when we were young, seatbelts was not a law. Now seatbelts is a law. When we were young, texting was not a law. Now there's a law called taxing, and you get 6 points, additional points on your license, which is good to have points on your license, and the insurance goes up. Why didn't it exist before? Well, why now that the United States is, well, they didn't have phones before. You understand what I'm trying to say? So the laws are created by life. If life changes, the laws will change. The Torah is just the opposite. Torah's laws create the life. Because without the Torah's law, there's no life. And there's no existence. So it doesn't change anything. It's on the contrary. If you want a healthy environment, and you want a healthy society, and you want a civilized society, how do I make that? The Torah creates that. So if the nations will follow the 7 Noach laws, and the Jews follow the Torah laws, that creates a healthy environment, a healthy society, and a settled world, to have a world that you can live in and bring God into this world. So laws that are from Torah are not made from life. They make life. They create life. They create existence. The laws that are made by modern law are created from life. And therefore they change according to the lifestyle of the people. The laws change. When we were younger, how old were you to have your first drink?
21.
And today? 21. Huh?
12.
So, what I'm bringing out the point here, it's two different shifts. So therefore, what changes in the reality? What changes in the reality is the difference between modern law and Torah law when you're speaking about human rights. In Torah law, there's no such a thing as human rights. There's no human rights. There's human responsibilities. There's no right. You have no... It's like someone saying to... Imagine someone says to his doctor, listen, I know you're doing a heart surgery on me because my heart is not working anymore, but you have no right to make it work. I mean, it's not... God created you with a mission, with a purpose. You didn't just by mistake come here, and therefore you have rights. The way God put the creation is just the opposite. I put you here with a mission and with a duty that I want you and only you could accomplish. And here is the way you're going to make the world exist. So therefore, there's no rights for you. There's duties and obligations that you have. So therefore, if you look in 12a, read 12a, page 82. See it?
Speaking of human rights concepts, I must say at once that no explicit concept of this kind is to be found in Jewish law. It is not only that the formative sources of Jewish law precede by millennia the first enunciation of such slogans as civil liberties, citizens' rights, or individual freedom. Jewish law is in no way unique or isolated among ancient systems of law or of religion which failed to recognize human rights specifically. It stands to reason that from the duty to assist and maintain the poor of a fundamental human right of every human being to his livelihood may be reasonably be inferred, as the fundamental right of life may justifiably be inferred from the prohibition of homicide.
So let's do exercise two. You have exercise two?
Yeah.
On page, look at this. Very interesting, just to show you the difference. There's one of the Ten Commandments is honor your father and mother. Is that a right or an obligation?
Obligation.
However, in the modern law, it would change. It would say parents have the right to expect honor and respect from their children. However, in the Jewish law, it's honor your father and your mother. It's not a right. It's an obligation because that creates a healthy society. True. That creates an environment that you need. Now let's go to the next one. What's the next one? You shall not murder. Right? Mm-hmm. In the modern law, it doesn't say that. It says a person has the right to live, and therefore you can't kill him. But how about if a person chooses that he wants to die? Can a person choose to die in the modern law? Not the Jew.
Yeah,
because in the modern law, you have a right to live. And if you don't want to live, you have a right also. In Jewish law, you don't have a right to murder you or yourself or anyone else. It's not a right. It's an obligation and a duty. Let's take the next one. You shall not commit adultery. Is that a right? Adultery is lotinaf. So how do you do it in the secular law? A spouse has exclusive rights to the intimate affection of their spouse. That's the modern version of the Ten Commandments. But the way the Ten Commandments are said, no, you have no right to anyone else. Someone told me an interesting story. He said a woman came over to him. This is one of my colleagues. This week he said a woman came over to him and wanted to shake his hands. So he says, I'm sorry, I can't shake your hands. So she says, why not? I'm human. He says, I'll tell you the truth. I'm not worried of shaking your hand, but I'm worried I might not leave go your hand. You get the concept? It's not the shaking the hand, it's what leads to. Now, you could say, well, I'm immune. You know, I'm like the angel, and nothing happens after I shake. But who's immune? We're humans. Are we immune? So God says, you know, don't shake the hand because you might not leave go your hand. You know. Next, you shall not steal. That's a command. In the modern law, it says a person has the right to possess property. You get the difference? Next, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. A person has the modern law is, a person has the right to be tried fairly. That means to have a good trial. You shall not covet. Covet means sachmod,
desire.
Your neighbor's house, wife, maidservant, right? Ox, donkey, or anything they own. That's the Jewish mandate. In the secular modern, it's a person has the right to control over the property and their possession. So basically, you know, nutshell is, the reason the Torah is not changeable and the Torah is eternal, because the only time something has to change if it's created by a society that changes. So then if the society changes, it needs to change. Torah is not created by society. Torah creates the society. Torah creates the environment. Torah creates the existence. So wherever you use it, it's creating that environment. Number one. Number two, what was the purpose that why God created the world to begin with and created the humans to begin with is to create a world that God could live in and make this world a holy place. And that's only through bringing the Torah into your life. Any questions on this before we go to the last point? Yeah?
Yeah, you mentioned that the Torah is filled with, let's say, the 613 mitzvahs, but you said the Christians only have to follow the seven?
No, not the Christians, the Gentiles.
The Gentiles, anyone who's not a Jew?
Anyone that's not a Jew has seven Noach laws. No killing.
Do they know that?
A lot of them know. Our job is to teach it to them.
It is?
Yeah. Moshe, when he got the Torah at Mount Sinai, God told them, the Jewish people, I want you to give the Torah, but the Gentiles, I want you to give them the seven Noach laws and teach them so they'll have a civilized world and a world that we can live in. Imagine everyone will abide by the seven Noach laws. We wouldn't have any war. What are they? First, believe in one God. Two, There's no other entity but God. Meaning, like we spoke about, there's no other power. So the sun doesn't have its own power. The planets don't have its own power. You know, in od koch, everything is God. Three, don't murder. Now, murder could be murder, or could be, like the Torah says, you say gossip about someone, you murdered them, because you killed their whole reputation. So murder doesn't have to always be with a gun, or if you embarrass someone in public, it's considered murder. And I know politicians don't do it, but sometimes, what are you laughing? Sometimes they have these debates and they degrade you to the like in front of a million people, they'll embarrass you. That's murder.
Trump did that.
Whoever did it, a lot of people did it. With everyone does it, unfortunately. Stealing, no stealing is number four. Now stealing, people think means going to someone's pocket and taking out money. No. Stealing can mean people's ideas. Oh, I have a new idea, and then you steal it. Waking up someone in the middle of the night, you know, at 2 o'clock. Hello, how you feel? I hope I didn't wake you up. No, you never wake me up. You know. Oh, why are you calling so early? 2 o'clock. Oh, you guys know what I'm saying? We forget that. So that's number four. Number five is called justice. That in every civilization, they have to create a kind of a justice system, how they should live, courts, and you know, you can't just be hefker. Hefker means no ownerless. There has to be a court of law, a court of order. If you do the right thing, you pass a red light, you know, or speeding. Okay. Number six, committing adultery. Interesting. People think adultery is only for Jewish people and all that. No, the Torah says even non-Jews also have this law. They can't live with a married woman. You know, can't live with animals. You know, the species. A mother, a father can't live with a daughter. You know, and it goes through those things that you can't. Number seven. This is not so, it's common today, but maybe it's not something you would like, is eating a live limb of an animal. What do I mean by that? You take a living animal, and while it's still alive, you pull off, let's say, the hand. So the animal is still alive, but you pull off like one limb, and you cook it, and you eat it. But you didn't first kill it, and then take the limb. It's called Eiver Min HaChai. So that's the seventh that God gave to all the 7 billion Gentiles at Mount Sinai. To the Jews, he said, I'm giving you the 613 mitzvahs, which is the Torah. But by doing it, you're creating the society. You're creating the environment. So it's not created by the law, by the society. You're creating the environment. And that's the whole purpose I created the world to begin with. And that's why I created you to begin with. To do and make the world a good world through following the Torah and mitzvahs. So when a person comes to you and says, could you please tell me what's my rights? My rights in Torah. There's no rights. What's my obligations? I have a whole list, 613. You getting what I'm saying? What's my duty? Oh, you have a big job. Now, here's the last point that we'll finish, is the duty on me only or everyone else. So here is where I told you before, when God created the first human being, he created them single. Then he made Chava, you know, Eve. But originally it was one. The animals were not like that. The animals he created, male and female, to begin with. There was not a lion and then made a female. The female and male lion were created two species right then and there. Why by man, the human, let's call it the human, God made it first one and then separated the two and then brought them together. What's the point? She says in text 13, because this is the purpose of why God created the whole world. What's the purpose? 13.
It is for the following reason that Adam was created alone. Every person must say, The world was created for me.
What do I mean for me? The nature of a person is to say, listen, there's 7 billion people in the world, there's 15 million Jews, so is it all me, my responsibility to make this world and create this world the way God wants it to be? So he says, yeah, I created the human one because I want every human being to know, every human, that the whole world is dependent on your act. If you're going to do the right thing, you will create the environment, you will make a difference and bring the whole world to its ultimate purpose of why I created it. It's not the other person's responsibility, it's yours. And as he says in text 14,
I was only created to serve my master.
Text 15,
the saying of the sages, the world was created for me, means as follows: the hiddenness and concealment of God were created for me, that I may eradicate it and reveal the truth.
Now let's go to egalitarian. What's egalitarian?
Equal.
Equal. Now why in Torah it doesn't fit that word? Why can't you use the word egalitarian in Torah? Not because Torah, you can't have rights, or you can't. Egalitarian means you're equal. It's not true. Because everyone was created with a different purpose and mission of why they came to this world that God wants them to accomplish and bring God in this world that no one else could do. There's no two people can do the same thing. It doesn't exist. So how did God do it? God says, I'm going to make different types of people. There's going to be Jews and non-Jews. You know, the non-Jews have a mission to accomplish, just like a Jew has a mission to accomplish. But how is the non-Jew going to know that he has to do his part and that you're going to do that part? So I'm going to make one Jew and one non-Jew. And each one has a mission that they have to bring God to this world and make and create a world the way God wants it to be. Then I'm going to make a Kohen and a Levi. You know, a Levi. Why is God discriminating? No. His mission is to be a Kohen. Her mission is to be a Levi. Because we don't have rights, we have duties and responsibilities. So it's not anymore discriminating. It's a different job. It's like someone saying, you know, I'm in the Air Force, but I would like to be in the naval, the Navy.
Navy.
It's not that discrimination that this guy's in the Navy and this guy's in the. It's different missions, but we're all doing a mission. I want to be a male or a female. It's not one or not one. It's not a right. It's a mission that God wants you, and that's why you happen to be a female. Oh, you happen to be a male. But it's not a mistake. It's a purpose of you have a different job. You have a different responsibility. You have a different mission. And therefore the Torah forbids the person to change it. You get what I'm saying? It's not like God wants to hurt you or wants to destroy you and says, oh, if you change your ability of being from one to another, or no. I'm giving you now clear evidence who you are and what you are and what's your mission. Because I created you, and you're the only one that exists in this world for me. Because I created the human single. So you're the only one that's here now. And I created you in a certain way because I have a mission that you could accomplish and bring God to this world and create the society and make the environment that I want you to create. You get the difference a little? So it's not like a God has a gun and a rifle and he says, okay, boom. It's a different mission. So if you have that paradigm and that way of looking at life, so then social roles, egalitarian, all these things have nothing to do with freedom of choice. Why doesn't God let me do what I want? It's not letting you do what you want or not letting you do. I created you to begin with a mission. Why this person lives till 100 and the other one lived to 50? This person lives to 80, this one. Everyone has a certain amount of time, a certain amount of day to accomplish their mission that they were created, that only they could bring to this world and society. I just want to share a little story that happened with one of the great Hasidim of the Alter Rebbe. He was a very, very wealthy, but he was very hospitality. He had many guests. Used to give people to sleep and to eat. He was very kind. to the point that he paid for all poor families' weddings. He paid for all his relatives' weddings. He was like the Jew that helped everyone. One day, the fortune turned over, and he was in a big dilemma because he promised everyone he's going to make their weddings, and he had, but he had no money. He lost everything. So he came, traveled all the way to the Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe, and he started to cry. He says, Rebbe, I don't know what God did. God gave me the money, and I did the right thing. I helped poor people. I gave people everything they need. How does God have a right to take it away from me? And he starts to cry. And the Rebbe then, the Alter Rebbe, got into a very deep trance, like out of space, like was like in deep thought. And then he said to him, after like 2-3 minutes of deep thinking, he turned to him, he says, listen, you just told me a whole list of what you want. You know, you want your money back and you need this and everything you need. Did you ever think for 1 minute why you were needed for to begin with? You tell me what you need. But why were you needed to begin with here? So when he heard it, he fainted. Because he all of a sudden realized, it's not what I need. What was I needed for? To the point that a few weeks later, before he left home, the Rebbe called him back in the room. He says, listen, I'm going to give you a blessing. You'll be wealthy again. Everything will come back. But remember, this time, it's not that I have the wealth or I. It's all for the mission of what you were created and what you are needed for and why you're here in this world. You're here for the purpose of doing what God wants, and you did a great job. But God wanted you to remember that it's God that gave you the mission. It's not that you are accomplishing. You know, it's not you're working. It's not God is working for you. It's you're working for God. So he did everything. But in the beginning, it was all, oh, God better give me wealth or health so I can give it to the other guy. It's not God working for you. It's you are created. The whole purpose you were created, as he says in text 14, I was only created to serve my master. So let's declare, this is from Talmud. This teaches us that the whole world, and the word in Hebrew, olam, olam means a world, also comes from the word helem. Helem means hidden, concealed. So God says, you know why the world was created? So you should unconceal. And you should reveal what the whole purpose of the world is. So your job is to bring the world to its ultimate purpose, to understand why the world is here to begin with. So, if someone asks you this question, why is it that women don't have to put on tefillin? They're allowed to put on, but they don't have to. What are you going to answer? The whole reason anyone puts on tefillin is because God gave them a purpose and a mission to serve Him by putting on tefillin. And this is how they bring God into the world and create the world that they're supposed to create. A woman doesn't have that as her mission. It's not her mission to accomplish. You getting what I'm saying? She doesn't have that obligation because God doesn't have that as her mission to do. I had once a man came complaining to me that he wants to give birth to children. He's upset why only his wife could give birth.
Is this true?
Yeah. He went to the doctor and they tried all kinds of things, but there was no way they could change and give a womb to a man. So he started to complain and all kinds of things. I said, I'm going to tell you something. I know you're upset, but think about it. Why are you here to begin with? It's not the world that's your right. It's a here as an obligation, a mission to God. God gave you a different mission. I remember someone in shul, he can't see. He's blind. And the Torah has different categories of blind people. I remember once we had a discussion with him. He says he realized every person has a different mission. So why some people God created blind? So some people want to say, well, you know why God made blind people? So the people that are not blind should appreciate what they have. That's a very silly answer. The real answer is that this person has a different mission. There is a very big violinist. His name is
Yitzhak
Perlman. He can't
raise polio. Has polio. He's crippled.
Right, crippled. But what a violinist!
Right.
So, is he doing his mission? Of course.
Of course.
To the highest level.
Right.
So. Everyone could say, well, why is this kid born with Perlman? Why is this kid born with a deficient? Call it a deficiency. Or let's make it, there was once a group of soldiers that were called from Tzahal, from the Israeli army, that were wounded. So in the army, they called them Nechei Tzahal. What's Nechei Tzahal mean? The wounded soldiers. So they used to take them, like these, a group of wounded soldiers, they used to take them out of Israel and take them different trips. So once, it was after the Yom Kippur War, they took a group of, let's say, 100 soldiers that were wounded and brought them out to New York. And one of the things that they came to visit the Rebbe. So they brought them into 770 and the Rebbe gave a special talk to them. And he said to them, because, and he went to each one of them and spoke to them, but he gave a talk and said, listen, they call you Nechei Tzahal, which means the wounded and the handicap is the right word, handicap of the Israeli army. I want to change your name. You're not Nechei Tzahal. You're Mitsuyanei Tzahal. Mitsuyan is excellence of the army. Because you fought, right? And you got wounded while fighting to protect the Jewish nation, so you're not handicapped. You're excellence, and now you have a different mission in the world. Don't feel down that, okay, I can't do what I was supposed to. Now you have a whole different mission that you can accomplish, and you're excellent. And it's a whole different thing. Now you can do a lot of other things that you wouldn't have done if you were then. We just have to turn it around. And that could go on and on. The same thing, why the Rebbe didn't let people retire. You know, people always used to ask the Rebbe, can I retire? No, no, no. Like I said, I can't. I'm like already 95 years old. So, I mean, so he says, you should work till 120. Why? He says, you know, when you get older, even though you can't do your physical work, but you have now the ability to teach people all your experiences and all your failings that you woke up from, you know, what they shouldn't do so they could be in the right track right away, not start from zero. And you could give them the wisdom that they don't have and they can't even get in years because you build it from scratch. So your mission now will be teaching, or your mission will be advising or consulting. So yeah, you're not going to do the physical labor because you don't have the strength. But I could do a lot of other things, even though I can't do the... So as life changes, your mission changes, and you have to just do the maximum of your mission of that level. So when you're older, your mission is here. When you're more older, you're here. Or when you're this, everyone has their mission. I heard this story from Rabbi Simon Jacobson, that his father was in the hospital. He had like a heart problem. So he was in the hospital for like a week or two. And the Rebbe gave Rabbi Simon Jacobson a piece of honey cake before Yom Kippur to go give his father and tell his father this message. He says, you know why you're in the hospital? He says, no. Tell him you're in the hospital because you have a mission to accomplish there. And when you finish accomplish your mission, you're going to go home. So he thought he was in the hospital because he had a heart problem. He says, no, you had a heart problem because you had a mission to accomplish in the hospital. So he all of a sudden said, oh man. So him and his wife, divided the floor in the hospital, and they went to visit all the people, and the Jewish people gave camels to the women, and the men tefillin, and the non-Jews, they gave them the seven och. Their whole hospital changed, and then when he did his mission, he got better, and he went on. But you could slay in the hospital, and you say, oh, why am I here? This is a terrible place, and you're yelling at the nurse, and you're screaming at the doctor, and the food is horrible. Every time I go to the hospital on Wednesday, I ask them, how's the food? They said, horrible. I said, thank God. Because if it was good, you want to stay here. Thank God it's horrible. You don't want to stay here. What do you think the hospital is supposed to give you food to want to stay here? It's a place you want to get out. You don't want to stay here. So, but if we take everything in life and we realize there's a mission, there's a purpose of why I'm here in that moment, it's not a right, it's a mission. So you say, okay, so now that I'm in this situation, means I have another mission. And my mission now is to do what I could do with this situation. And this today, God gave me this for some reason.
How do you figure out your mission?
For that day? Well, you have a whole Torah that says everything to... No, what I'm bringing out is sometimes there's things you can't do. Someone broke their foot. So they can't dance at a wedding. So they're going to say, okay, so I'm nothing worth? No. Now you can dance at a wedding. It means that you could clap at the wedding. Or you could write a beautiful letter to the bride and groom and give them a... I'm saying your mission is not that I'm worthless. Now there's a different purpose and a higher mission that you could accomplish in your situation that you are handicapped, so to say, for that reason. It doesn't mean that, okay, I'm lost, I'm handicapped, now I'm not worth anything. Or like people always say, oh, you know, once I reach 95... They don't need me anymore. It's like, you know, just if I get sick, just make sure they don't resuscitate me, because what's the purpose? It's not what's the purpose. Every day I'm here, there's a mission. So I don't know exactly every point what the mission is, but there's a purpose why God created you. Yeah.
I think what you was asking, not for somebody who's handicapped, but just for an average person.
So that's why we have the Torah.
You're here.
And the mitzvos. The Torah guides us. Everyone has, but the Torah gives us the guide. The Torah is our manual. And you go to work. If you're already retired from work, so you work in other things, helping people, whatever your thing is, you shouldn't stop doing. You know what I'm trying to say? Even if you're not working in business, so work in something else. Find something that I could do. Think of what you have the ability to do and the strength, and do that. And now go bring to the world at least that ability that you do have. That no one, and maybe you could create something. Don't look at it, oi, I'm old, or oi, I can't work, or oi, this. No, now your job changed to a different mission. Anyways, let's just conclude. We have 2 minutes left, and then we'll finish. It's on page 88.
Government does not...
You see the key points?
You see the objectives or purpose to people's lives. Therefore, it is utterly hopeless to rely solely on it for moral direction. In our search for creating a healthy society, we must look beyond rights. In contrast to modern law, the Torah does offer humanity meaning, purpose, guidance, and instruction. Its instruction is essential for humanity to reach its final destination. Its laws create life. By necessity, the Torah assigns people with roles to play in the journey of humanity. A person's role, with its demands and privileges, is their key to finding meaning and purpose. 4. Shifting our focus from human rights to human purpose is both challenging and rewarding. Challenging because it confronts us to attach substantial weight to our life's choices, and rewarding because it imbues our lives with utmost significance. 5. In a word, modern governments protect people. The Torah makes them necessary. Perhaps we can make room for both.
Claire? Yeah?
I noticed that on page 83, where it says the difference between the Torah's duties and the modern law's rights. I just noticed that all the Torah commandments, the duties and responsibilities, they all make a person a better person. They all make you demand that you should be a good person because you have to do all these things. But all the rights, you know, you have a right, you know, whatever, to own property, et cetera, et cetera. Those are all, like, selfish. You know, I have a right for what I want. I want this, I want that. And so I'm just seeing, like, a juxtaposed against each other. The Torah's laws make you demand that you be a good person, and the modern laws all assert a kind of selfishness that you have to give me this, you owe me, the government owes me these things. See what I mean? Like, the modern laws say that you have a right to this and that and the other thing. That's more of a selfish outlook on life. Whereas the Torah's laws
for God and the higher purpose.
And become, you have to be a good person. But the right side doesn't demand that you be a good person. Just says that you owe me this and that and this. You owe me, you know, to let me have property and to, you know, all the other things that are the rights, you know, equal rights and so forth. They're all selfish.
So if you want to put it in a better term, instead of using equal rights, use equal mission.
Equal important mission.
Equal importance. In other words, we're all as important. Equal importance.
Yes.
Nowhere in the Torah it says that this is less important or this is more important. We're all important. And every mitzvah is just as important. Rabbi, what's more important, kosher or Shabbos? Well, kosher is very important for kosher, and Shabbos is very important for Shabbos. You know what I mean? It's not. So every person, every mitzvah has equal importance, and we all have the equal mission to accomplish it in all different ways. You getting what I'm saying? So is there equal rights? No. Equal importance? Yes. Equal mission? Yes. Equal abilities? Yes. Equal focus? Yes.
Responsibility.
But responsibility? Yes. But equal rights? We don't have rights to begin with. There's which president said, don't ask what the country could do for you.
Kennedy.
Don't ask what the country could do for you, but ask what you could do for the country.
Beautiful.
Right? So the same thing here. Don't ask what God could do for you. Ask what you could do for God.
Very good, Rabbi.
See that? What I said? No, but I'm saying it's the same idea. People live in this country, like in America. I always say to people, you know, don't live in this country and just look. Do something for the country.
Oh, sure.
Go to work. I can't work. Do something. There has to be something you could do. Don't be... How would I say? Don't be like spoiled to do nothing, because you're not going to feel good about it, because you're not doing your mission.
Well, there's some, right?
Huh? Bread of shame. You ever heard of bread of shame? Bread of shame means anything you get that you didn't work for is called bread of shame, because I didn't earn it. You ever heard of this in the Torah? It's called Nahama dechasufa. Nahama. The chesufa, bread of shame. So a lot of times a person says, well, if you work for something and you create something, you feel good about yourself. It's funny that I asked my mother once, because people always used to tell me women's rights, I asked my mother, did you ever feel that you, like a second class citizen in Jewish law? And thank God she has 12 children. Six boys, six girls. 12. Six boys and six girls. She made it equal rights. She didn't want to. So she says, never. I said, yeah, I'm trying to figure out why. And then I realized.
She was too busy.
She had a mission.
No. Any person, whether it's a woman, a man, a girl, a boy, that's doing their mission of why they're here, they feel fulfilled that they don't need anything more to fulfill them. When you're doing and accomplishing who you are and your ability, you're so fulfilled that there's nothing that you're missing that you need to fulfill. So when a Jewish woman is being a true Jewish woman and doing the maximum that a woman could do, there's nothing she needs more. She feels so fulfilled, she feels overjoyed and overwhelmed. Wow.
She's busy.
And when a man does what they're supposed to do, then they're not looking. The only time you look for other things is when you're not fulfilling what you are and what your ability was created to do with your mission that you were brought here to do the Torah mitzvahs. Then you don't feel satisfied and you're looking at everything else. You getting what I'm saying? So let's conclude. Equal responsibility, equal importance, equal mission, and equal powered by God in an infinite way, in a revealed way. Amen.
Amen.
Just want to